And bring it to order. And I know that President Newton has been reading through the minutes and would like to move the minutes.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the minutes for the last meeting.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Newton. All those in favor of passing the minutes, approving the minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Minutes have been adopted. Members, today we have an overview and whatever else they wish to share with us from the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Commissioner Katie Clark-Steven will be presenting. So, and then we will have a presentation by Enterprise Minnesota. It looks like we have a few CEOs coming along with them, with Enterprise Minnesota. So, unless there's any other business that I need to take care of first, I will call Commissioner Steven, Clark-Steven, to the table. And any that she chooses to bring with her. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner.
Thank you.
I see you've brought a lot of backup, so in case there's something we stump you with, you can cover. You'll bring up the others. So, if you'd please identify yourself for the tape and proceed with an overview of what DEED does for the state and what your budgets are going to be this year, whatever you can share at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Katie Clark-Steven, Commissioner of DEED. Honored to be here today. You should all have a handout on our programs. I'd like to begin by walking through an overview of DEED, and then I'd like to share some information about DEED's programs that were announced in the governor's budget. So our mission at the Department of Employment and Economic Development is to enhance the economic success of individuals, businesses, and communities. We focus on attracting, retaining, and growing business, increasing exports and foreign direct investment, supporting economically vibrant communities, matching skilled workers with jobs in demand, helping Minnesotans with disabilities find jobs and independence, and supporting our unemployed workers and stabilizing communities. Total funding for the agency is $812 million. 71% of our overall budget is federal funds, and our overall budget, general fund is just 10% of that budget. Of the general fund dollars that we receive, which is a total of $81 million, 49% of those dollars go to our vocational rehabilitation services programs, 28% with our business and community development programs, and then state services for the blind is 15%, which is 4% going to the Minnesota Trade Office and 2% to the workforce development team. Total full-time employees, just over 1,600. 500 of those employees are in our workforce development division, which is largely federally funded. Our unemployment insurance team is the second largest group in our agency with just over 400 employees. And our voc rehab team, 383. The economic development side of our agency includes business and community development with 49 employees and the trade office with 13 staff. The agency is really two divisions working closely together. The first of those divisions is our economic development side of the organization. Some highlights from this team that they produced in 2012. Our community development team invested $4.2 million to clean up 15 contaminated sites for new development, leveraged $4.2 million in additional investment, and created or retained nearly 600 jobs. Our trade office administered the State Trade and Export Promotion Grant for small businesses, which provided $450,000 from the Small Business Administration to assist small businesses to expand in foreign markets. And our business and community development team was involved with nearly half of the 96 business expansions announced in the state through the first 9 months of the year, attracted more than $650 million in investments, and created 3,000 jobs across the state. And finally, our small business development centers provided technical assistance to 2,783 small business clients who established 143 new small businesses, gained more than $100 million in capital, and retained more than 3,375 jobs. So I think there's some excellent work happening on this side of the organization. And the second division is our workforce development division. Some highlights from this division: our job skills partnership grant provided $3.9 million from the partnership to help 4,400 workers learn new skills, including 4,000 incumbent workers and 400 new hires. And our voc rehab team achieved 2,490 successful employment outcomes for people with disabilities, making this the second straight year since the recession that the agency exceeded its employment goals. So some really, really great work. From a budget standpoint, in economic development, our business and community development team receives $22.9 million from the general fund, and the trade office is currently receiving $3 million from the general fund. Our workforce development staff, $1.7 million from the general fund. Voc rehab is $39.7 million. State services for the blind, $11.8 million. And unemployment insurance is all federal. And at this time, I would like to provide an overview of DEED's four proposals that were announced through the governor's budget recently. The first is the Minnesota Investment Fund. Otherwise known as MIF, this is one of the state's key job creation tools. It helps encourage Minnesota firms that have options outside of the state to expand here and provides incentives to attract companies from outside of our state and also outside of our country to Minnesota. The MIF loan program provides upfront financing to create and retain high-quality jobs in Minnesota. The loans are attractive to companies because they're offered upfront and can be used to offset capital expenditures, often equipment purchases. All projects must meet minimum requirements for private investment, jobs created, and wages paid. Over the last 8 years, MIF has funded 53 projects, created more than 3,000 new good-paying jobs across Minnesota, and retained more than 800 jobs. Governor Dayton's budget invests $30 million in ongoing funding in the Minnesota Investment Fund. This significant investment increases the size of MIF tenfold from recent funding and will help create 7,500 to 10,000 new jobs in Minnesota and leverage $800 million in private investment. The second proposal is the Minnesota Job Creation Fund. We believe that Minnesota needs more than one tool in the toolbox to effectively compete in today's global economy. That's why Governor Dayton's budget invests $25 million in a new program called the Minnesota Job Creation Fund. It's a new strategic pay-for-performance incentive program that provides a maximum award of $1 million per award. This will replace JobZ, which is set to expire in 2015, and provides a more strategic alternative. This program will be accountable. It'll be based on set goals, and incentives will only be provided after those job creation goals are met. And it will be fair and responsible. It will be a statewide program without zones, and incentives will be capped, which will allow for a more predictable budget and planning going forward. The Minnesota Job Creation Fund is expected to create 5,000 jobs and leverage $450 million in additional private investment. The next proposal is the Minnesota Global Competitiveness Initiative. 75% of the world's buying power is outside of the U.S. borders, and a huge opportunity exists for for Minnesota's high-quality products and services outside of the U.S. borders, and we need to be better positioned to capitalize on this opportunity. This is a $1.5 million global competitiveness initiative to open 3 new offices in key foreign markets, provide a STEP grant for export assistance for small business, and help to build an Invest in Minnesota campaign to attract foreign investors' interest to Minnesota. 37 of 50 states have multiple overseas trade offices. 34 have more than one office, and 16 states have more than 5 offices overseas. Minnesota currently has 1 in Shanghai, China. These offices are strategically located to enhance export opportunities and increase foreign direct investment. Minnesota's trade and investment program is currently small compared to many states' programs, and with these added resources, we expect to see increased exports and foreign investment. And our fourth and final proposal is the unemployment insurance tax reduction. Governor Dayton's proposal reduces the unemployment insurance taxes by $346.5 million over 2 years, giving Minnesota employers more money to invest in their business. The governor's proposal reduces the tax rate from 0.5 to 0.1% of all taxable wages for all for-profit employers, giving Minnesota employers more money to invest back in their business. And at this point in time, I'd like to open it up for questions. And I do have many members of the fantastic DEED team here in the audience if you have specific questions about their programs.
Representative Slavik?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for taking my questions. I have 2 questions. One is with your workforce development, the skills that are needed are changing so fast. So my question is, how do you keep up to date that you're teaching, helping people develop the right skills?
Mm-hmm. Can I call?
Yep. I think you need to bring up.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative, I'd like to welcome Bonnie Elsie, Director of our Workforce Development Program, so that you can get the most accurate information.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Elsie. Could you please identify yourself for the tape?
And yes, Chair Mahoney and representatives, I am Bonnie Elsie, and I am Director of the Workforce Development Division. There are many tools that we use in order to determine what jobs are available in the labor market. First of all, we have a labor market information office. We have regional labor market analysts that are constantly analyzing data in the local communities. And then I think it's really important to note that we have 16 workforce service area which have workforce boards made up of employers as well as representatives of the community. And we require every year that they do a complete analysis of their workforce needs in the community and send us a plan on what businesses and what industries they're going to target within the community. So we also have business service reps that call on businesses throughout the state so that we understand not just the occupations, but like you said, there's a lot within an occupation, there's a lot of changes of the skill sets they need. So we try to get up to date with those new skill sets. And we work with other state agencies. The Minsky just did an outreach program looking at different industries and inviting in business and talking about what kinds of training do people need and what skill sets do they see lacking. And our Governor's Workforce Development Board also has done a Skills Now program, having focus groups within communities trying to determine what skill gaps exist within communities.
Thank you.
Was there a follow-up?
No, not a follow-up, but I have another question.
Well, that would be fine, but I'm going to ask for Ms. Elsie.
Okay.
Did you have a question for her?
No.
Okay. Were there any other questions for Ms. Elsie? I actually have one, and maybe you could speak into the mic, actually.
Oh.
So that's one of the problems people don't. You know, we have great technology, but we don't spend much on ourselves here. you know, you make a point of how inclusive the accumulation of information about what kind of jobs we need, mm-hmm. or how we train for them. My question is, what's the timeline? Because if you started last summer, is the class going to be ready next September, or is it 2 years out? And how relevant is it a year after you've made that decision?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, a real answer to your question, I think, would have to be asked of higher education. I don't know how fast they can change their curriculum. I do know that their customized training within post-secondary education can respond to needs pretty fast. And I also know that we have done some special programs with Dunwoody, called Right Skills Now, with manufacturing. But really, as far as the curriculum and how long it takes to be developed, it's more a higher education question.
Somebody else that needs to come in front of the committee. Your other question was for about concerning what or for whom?
For Commissioner Sate. How do you pronounce your last name?
Sieben.
Thank you. I have a lot of support in my district for Job C, and they're pushing me to get it renewed. And I was just wondering what the difference was between that and your new program for jobs and how I can sell that to my area.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Stephen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. I would like to call our Executive Director of our Business and Community Development team, Kevin McKinnon,
okay.
Who's been working with the Job Z program for quite a few years now and can help help clarify.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to the committee, Mr. McKinnon, and please identify yourself for the tape.
Mr. Chair, members, Kevin McKinnon, Executive Director of the Business and Community Development Division at DEED. we spent a lot of time over the past number of years, actually, with Job Z, and we've learned a lot from the program, and ultimately feel that it is a much-needed program, and certainly understand the concerns of your constituents around the state as we mm-hmm. have dealt with a lot of them. There's some key pieces with the Job Creation Fund that that we'd like to just sort of lay out here today, but obviously it's not finalized at this point, and certainly the input is welcome into this. But these are basically performance-based grants that we're talking about for companies that would invest up to $500,000, or sorry, more than $500,000, and create at least 10 jobs. this job creation incentive fund, basically in combination with the Minnesota Investment Fund, provides flexible and effective tools to craft some of these packages to make combination packages, essentially, for businesses that are being addressed currently in Job Z. Obviously, no incentives are provided until the company actually meets their goals. But at the end of the day, a couple of things with the Job Creation Fund are that we've looked at and evaluated Job Z in that some of these projects are 10, 12-year incentive packages. This we're trying to target down into a more streamlined version so that when Job Z started, most of the benefits were sales tax related. And continue to be sales tax related. We will be addressing that in the capital investment side with grants of up to $500,000 available to cover that, particularly on materials, building materials, and those types of things that are currently eligible in Job Z. The other component of this is the job creation aspect of it, which would be basically granted back to the company after they create the jobs and they've been in place for a year. So really it's based on accountability, it's based on pay for performance, and that's essentially how we're approaching this. And as the Commissioner mentioned in her opening remarks, it is based on accountability. It is based on a lot of the things that we've learned over the years, and we certainly understand the importance of the program.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I could just add.
Commissioner, go right ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members, I just want to also make note, there was a report done by the OLA in 2008, thank you, that did a review of the JobZ program, and so I just want to recommend that as a reference as well.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for you, Commissioner, on the trade offices. You're looking at establishing three trade offices. Are they in established markets, emerging markets? And also, do you work through the commercial attachés at the embassies around the world?
Mm-hmm. Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, we are, the trade office is currently going through a strategic review of our top export markets as well as our top foreign direct investment markets, and putting together that recommendation on where those offices would be located. I would anticipate that it would probably, since we only currently have one office in Shanghai, we would probably have at least two of the three be in markets that are mostly established partners where we see even greater opportunity in those markets. Once that decision's made, I'd be happy to share that information with you. And I'm sorry, the rest of your question.
Well, excuse me, Commissioner, Mr. Chair. In all of our embassies and consulates, we have commercial attachés who work with states and with businesses mm-hmm. to promote businesses. And are you using that and availing yourself to that, Commissioner? Thank you.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. Yes, we work very closely with the U.S. Foreign Commercial Service, as well as the Commercial Service here in the United States. Anytime our trade office is organizing a trade mission, as one example, we're working hand-in-hand with those foreign commercial officers. We've identified that other states have a full-time presence and an office in markets, and these offices are helping to greatly increase exports and foreign investment into the states. While we'll continue working very closely with the U.S. Foreign Commercial Service, it is necessary for Minnesota to have its own presence in those markets.
Thank you.
Commissioner, I actually have a question for both of you, but for Commissioner to follow up on the trade office, do those other trade offices by other states around the world have the single employee like we have in Shanghai, or you know, we actually are partnering with somebody, but I mean, how effective is a one-person trade office versus two, three, four people that might be able to know the language, know the regulations, some of the customs? I mean, the trade office, to be effective, how many people does it need?
Mr. Chair.
This is a pretty good softball.
Thank you. yes, our office in Shanghai, we actually have a team working for us there. The contract is only $55,000 per year, but we do have access to a full team. We have two main contacts, but they have additional staff. They also serve, I believe, two other states that they work with as well. I think having a full-time presence on the ground is very important in key foreign markets as far as increased exports and foreign direct investment. Our trade office currently has staff here in St. Paul that are very knowledgeable, speak multiple languages, know the cultures, and do excellent work. They really need a partner on the ground in those key foreign markets to be looking for companies that are interested in creating a U.S. headquarters, looking at investing in U.S. companies to help be that facilitator.
And just so that the rest of the committee understands that I had a conversation with the commissioner that I thought South America, Africa, and India were really good places to locate trade offices, and she just as deftly handled not answering me there as she just did there. Maybe I'll get better with Mr. McKinney. What's the time to award? So someone applies for the Minnesota Job Creation Fund, and how much time do they have to create their jobs, and how long before they get that the grant check written to them?
Mr. Chair, members, the typical process that we go through today is obviously from the time that they make the application and we set the date for job creation is typically 2 years. In this case, what we'd be dealing with here from the Job Creation Fund on the capital investment side, where you're looking at the investment that they're making in facilities, you're probably looking at, we want to see the investment happen probably within a year, within 2 years, definitely of an award per se. They would obviously have to make the investment before they could come back and apply for a refund. On the job creation side, again, that goes back to a piece that we implement through business subsidy law as well. Typically, it's a 2-year process that you have to create those jobs. And the idea here is once you get to the number that you said you were going to create, then you become eligible for the refunds. And there could be a set timeline of 3, 4, 5 years as to how long you would get those grants based on the jobs that you said that you were going to create. And if they do meet those thresholds each year, theoretically they could be eligible for the refund for 3 to 5 years. Timeline could be determined.
Thank you. Representative Kiefer?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of comments. Going back to just the overseas trade office, and you have one person from Minnesota over there right now. Is that what I understand?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we do have two main contacts that live in China.
Okay.
And then they have a staff that also works with them.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think two actually is plenty, because I know that having lived overseas, there's very active chambers of commerce, American chambers of commerce, that work directly with ambassadors from the U.S. to promote business growth as well. So I think it's appropriate. I don't know that we need to spend a lot more money from Minnesota to do that. But on another point, I would like to talk more about the deed budget. Is that okay, Mr. Chair?
I run a really tight ship. Go right ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay. Thank you. First, I want to thank the governor for decreasing the unemployment insurance rates. That's a step in the right direction to lower the cost of doing business. But I'm just curious now with the Minnesota Investment Fund. You said you like to an example was you give loans to entice businesses here. And so I guess my first question is, once you get the business here, you said that the loans oftentimes are used to purchase equipment. Would this equipment be subject then to the new proposed sales taxes?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. McKenna. Whoever wants to carry that one.
Mr. Chair, members, the question was, would the sales tax that we're giving a loan through a MIF loan, would that be eligible for the job creation tax credit? Essentially, could they get the sales tax removed from that? The answer to that is we already have a sales and use tax on manufacturing equipment that's refunded. That's an as-of-right incentive in the tax law today, where the companies that are buying manufacturing equipment, as an example, could apply for that refund. What we're talking about on the job creation side is primarily the building material side of this, which is currently not exempt, but within Job Z today it is exempt.
Mr. Chair?
Follow up?
Yes, please. Just clarify, if the budget proposal were to pass tomorrow, would they be subject to sales tax on the equipment that they're borrowing money from to start a business in Minnesota?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, if the budget passed as is, it would be subject to the 5.5% sales tax. If I could expand, I would just like to provide a little bit of background on economic development incentives and currently where our department stands in this area. Minnesota currently ranks 39th in terms of spending on economic development incentives. On a per capita basis, we rank 46th in spending on economic development. Kevin can tell you firsthand that he and his team are meeting with companies on a daily basis that are coming to the state, and they have a proposal from another state, and they're asking, here's what we have. Just yesterday, we were with a company. They had a proposal from the state of Georgia, and they have a plant here in Minnesota. They have a plant in Georgia. They're looking to expand, and they're trying to decide where should that expansion take place. And they are asking, what can Minnesota offer? Currently, our Minnesota Investment Fund does not have a dollar in the account. And so we have nothing to offer from that fund. We are able to say that there's been some discussion this session around that fund, and if we receive additional funding, that we'll be following up with them. Also, our JobZ program is scheduled to sunset in 2015. So as an agency, we do feel that it's very pertinent and able for Minnesota to continue to have a seat at that table with negotiations and being considered a strong place for companies to look to expand or relocate, that we do have some funding into these programs.
So, Commissioner, we've actually moved up on the list from where I always thought we were. I thought we were dead last in economic development spending. Did you have a follow-up? And then I'm going to move on to some of the others because we have to get another presenter in. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I really think this is extremely important because we are talking about jobs here. And we're talking about our economy. And we're talking about budgets. And this is all very crucial. So I appreciate the time to have an in-depth discussion. You know, you also mentioned that we need to effectively compete. I totally agree with you, but I think we've probably come from it a different approach. You said that we're competing in a global society. You're right, we are. If you don't follow me on Twitter, you can check out a tweet I did yesterday from the Wall Street Journal. And it was titled, The State Tax Reformers. And if you follow down to the end of it, it specifically mentions Minnesota and the governor's tax proposal is absolutely backwards in how we're going to grow our economy and get jobs here in Minnesota. So I'd encourage people to read that. And I'd just like to follow up with, how do we offer, like, a $30 million package with MIF, and yet we're looking at, from the budget prediction of tax revenues that the state will get in the new budget, about $5.6 billion. The numbers don't add up. The state's going to take more money by taxing businesses than what we're offering as incentives to come to the state. You can address that if you want to. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, I always like to take my advice from Robert Murdoch, so if you had any comments that you'd like to add? Well, somebody owns the Wall Street Journal, and you know, the guy
Mr. Chair, Representative,
in Britain, I think maybe. Oh. Maybe not.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would be happy to meet with you to talk about what we might do in this area of jobs. I appreciate your passion around job creation and what we can be doing. My role is to help talk about where we currently stand with economic development incentives and take a look at how we compare with what other states have and ensure that we are competitive when it comes to what we can offer. Texas has a $200 million closing fund. Michigan has a $50 million closing fund. I personally do not think we need to be at those levels because I think we have a skilled workforce here. We have natural resources. We have a great geographic location. There are many reasons why companies are interested in Minnesota beyond economic development incentives. But I also want to make sure that my team is armed with the tools that they need to be able to help compete when there are companies looking to relocate or expand.
Yeah, I'm going to move on. Representative Uglum?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Comment first and a question second. Comment is, I'm really glad to see that we are looking at expanding our overseas trade offices, and I certainly agree that South America, India, and possibly Southeast Asia, real economic powerhouses in emerging markets, could get us a lot of bang for the buck in terms of exports for our businesses here in Minnesota. So I think that's just great. I've always thought that Minnesota having one trade office is probably not a good idea from a competitive standpoint with other states. That being said, I'm very concerned, too, about the governor's budget and the sales tax on businesses' services and the effect. We are sitting here looking at spending a lot of money on the Minnesota Investment Fund and the Job Creation Fund, and it seems like this is at cross purposes. I just feel that this is, you know, these funds are set up for us to compete with other states, to attract businesses from other states. And in this case, with the tax on business services in particular, it's obviously a huge drag for anybody to come here to Minnesota. So you have a classic push-pull relationship here. It seems like we're a little bit stuck in the mud. And I hope that we can take a good, hard look at that, because I hate seeing us throw money in one hand and then take it away in the other. And I think businesses from all over the country are going to look at this and say North Dakota or Wisconsin might be a little better place to operate. So I hope you will consider that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
There was a question there, was there? It was a request, but not quite a question.
It's a request and a rhetorical question, okay. But that's it, pal.
I'm going to move on. Representative Clark, you had one. And we do have, we're going to end this question in about 5 to 6 minutes, so briefly.
Very briefly. Actually, it's been said several times, so maybe I'm just reinforcing what the chairman was indicating, too. And in terms of the trade offices, one of the other factors to keep in mind, which continent you place those on, I would encourage you to think about the new Minnesotans, the new Americans we have, and some of the abilities of those folks, and I think that might even be where the chairman's coming from, too. We have people, lots of new people in our state who have lots of expertise in business from Africa, from South America, Mexico, various places. So I know I've had requests from a number of them, like, can we do a sister city kind of economic development kind of relationship. So if you're interested in that, I guess maybe we could have more conversation, and it sounds like several of us have those thoughts.
Thank you, Representative Clark. Representative Gunter, I think you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, good to see you again.
Mm-hmm.
Besides getting money to help deed and our economic developers throughout the state, like MIF money, how do we compare with our neighboring states, such as Iowa, that has $255 million to try to get Minnesota businesses to come to Iowa? Wisconsin, when the governor came out with his tax proposal, the governor of Wisconsin is redoubling his efforts to come get Minnesota businesses for Wisconsin. There are three states in the Midwest that are this year going without having any income tax, that being Kansas, Nebraska, in Oklahoma. I think it's time that we consider at least looking at establishing parity and eliminating barriers to growth, such as our high commercial and industrial property taxes, I think the second highest in the nation. They are barriers. I've heard them very often mentioned. This is the reason I didn't go to Minnesota, I went to Iowa. Mm-hmm. I live 12 miles from Iowa. Help me out. Help me keep them this way. We need a lot of help, and I really I know you're going to be up for the job and eliminate barriers to growth for Minnesota jobs and industry. I'm very excited about the fact that Minnesota has gained 50,000 new jobs that we didn't have before. So Minnesota has a record number of people working today. It will not last unless we do the right things. So look forward to talking to you later about these things, and I'm excited you're here.
Thank you.
Representative Purcell, you had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did, and brief comment, and I'm quite taken by the positively Minnesota on the front page here. My God, you'd think we're going to heck in a handbasket listening around here some of this, but I don't think we are. And I'm sorry, Representative Kiefer, that I missed your tweet. I quite religiously don't tweet, so I don't do a lot of that. But I can tell you that I've spent a lot of time over the last number of days looking for that budget surplus that everybody was talking about last fall, and I haven't found it yet. I don't know what the heck happened. So I'm struggling with that. I'll go back home and ask my constituent. What my question was specifically, you were talking about tax refund for equipment purchases, and this is a question that I think came from Representative Kiefer, and about the sales tax on equipment. So would that refund apply to the in the scenario that was presented, that if indeed equipment was purchased and tax was paid, that there would be that refund available?
Mr. McCain.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, the sales tax on manufactured equipment today, as is in law, manufacturers buy manufacturing equipment, they pay the sales tax up front, and it is a refundable tax expenditure that we then cut them back a check.
Follow-up?
Thank you for that clarification. I just
thank you.
And Mr. McKenna, if I could be so, if you'd be so kind, I've actually sat through a couple of discussions about the sales tax exemption after the fact on the tax committee and in this committee. And if you could put together a small fact sheet about how that actually works for our members, because I think that is kind of confusing. And I understand where you're going with this. I disagree and agree a bit. So I'm sure when you come back with all the budget bills that will be here, we will be having so much more fun. And I think, Representative Fabian, you're going to have the last question.
Where did you get this from? I'll show you.
Did you not? Just ignore him.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I've got two real quick questions. Number one, I actually had a bill in the last legislative session that would have expanded the sales tax exemption on capital equipment purchases for small businesses. We heard testimony in committee and talking to small business people who were eligible for some of these refunds, that it takes a really long time, up to 14 months to get some of these refunds back. What steps are we taking in the bureaucracy to speed these things up?
Before we go into that, I think that comes out of the Department of Revenue, and it really they wouldn't be able to answer. So what was your other question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then my other question, on Tuesday, you know, we had discussions in here about robotics and so forth and workforce development. I'm concerned about, the proposed budget basically zeroing out the workforce development component, and obviously that's it's a big concern with our unemployment rate being it's on page 22 in the handout that I have, for those of you that are looking at it. Okay. Okay. It's not being increased, excuse me. It's not zeroed out, but the increase is zero. Okay? And with our unemployment rate being 5.7 or, depending upon which metrics you look at, that's a concern of mine.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you for sharing that feedback. There isn't currently an increase for the general fund for our workforce development division in the governor's budget. That program is largely federally funded. We do have a total of $300 million on that side of the agency that is federal funds, so we're continuing to look at how we use those dollars, making sure that they're being used in the most effective ways.
And Commissioner and Representative Fabian, most of our workforce development money comes through the Workforce Development Fund, which is a charge. I'll get you a fact sheet on that, but it's essentially a charge that employers pay on the first $28,000
per employee.
And I can get you all that stuff, and I'll share it with the committee for those who haven't seen it before. But that's typically where our money comes from for workforce development and workforce training at a state level. It doesn't come out of the general fund. So with that, Commissioner, I'm going to we will be asking you and your brain trust to come on back and explain the governor's budget when the bills start coming through, and hopefully you'll have an opportunity to meet with as many people on the committee as possible to explain it before you get here.
Sure.
Because that's always a better way to do it, rather than have 40 questions in a two-hour spot, rather than, you know, maybe we can get it down to 10. Thank you for coming today, and we will look forward to seeing you in a couple, 3 weeks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members.
Members, I think it's going to take a minute for Enterprise Minnesota to get set up. And I do encourage you to ask Dee to stop into your office with the budget documents and kind of explain what they're doing. It's a $1 billion that they spent, both federally and state. And it's our responsibility to kind of track and see how it's going, see if they're doing a good job of it, and if there's anything we can do to improve it.
That's right. Mr. Chair? I would just like to say I think it was a little frustrating for some of us listening to some of the criticisms that are being weighed about parts of this budget when the governor's budget is actually a complex budget with lots of moving parts, but not all of them rest in this department. Mm-hmm. And so some of the criticisms that were posed by a few of the members on the committee, there was the yes but answer, but it wasn't a jobs committee, it's a tax committee or another committee's under their jurisdiction. And so I just would like to kind of put on the record that while some of us didn't speak, that does not mean that we were in complete agreement with many of the comments that were made, but that we're looking for a more robust discussion of the budget as it affects all the committees.
And thank you, Representative Norton. I wholeheartedly agree. At the current time, I really do like the governor's budget. I'm sure that as any smart human being, our opinions changed all the way around between now and May 21st. A little bit up, a little bit down. Mr. Kill, are you all up and running?
I believe I am. Chairman Mahoney.
Good to have you here. Please identify yourself for the committee and proceed.
Well, good afternoon, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bob Kill, and I'm the president and CEO of Enterprise Minnesota. And Enterprise Minnesota today is a standalone, not-profit consulting organization that works with small and mid-sized manufacturers. Our mantra is to help manufacturing enterprises grow profitably, and we focus on helping them compete and grow. And you just heard from the Department of Employment and Economic Development some of the programs that we also work jointly with. It's my honor to be with you today to seek your support for the Growth Acceleration Program, known by many of you as GAP, as it's commonly known. It was authorized by the legislature in 2007 and has grown to have outstanding bipartisan support because it fuels job creation, job retention, and industry that is a key economic driver of our state's economy, and particularly Greater Minnesota. Manufacturing jobs, once you leave the Twin Cities, are by no doubt the lifeblood of our communities. And I always say if you take a 35-employee manufacturing company out of a community, it's like closing the high school. The downtown dies soon after that. Some statistics that I think many people are not aware of is there are 7,400 manufacturers in our state, and about 50% are outside of the seven-county metro area. And a statistic that I love to talk about is that it's a 20% multiple of wages over jobs. So 13% of the state's jobs are in manufacturing, 16% of the wages. Yet almost two supporting jobs are created for every job in manufacturing, with an astounding average weekly wage that shocks most people. As manufacturing has moved from the traditional understanding of foundries and manual labor to very advanced manufacturing. Yet today, because of a whole generation of telling people it's not a great career.
Mr. Kill, for just a second. Representative Maher and Representative Gunther, did you want to have a conversation about taxes? Because I'm certainly seeing that going on over there. Oh, I guess not. Mr. Kill.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
If you want to, we
can. Thank you, Chairman, and Committee Member Gunther. But despite that, there's almost 5,000 jobs open around our state
Mr.
today.
Mr. Kill, could I ask you a question? Do you have any? Have you done any work down in representing Gunther's district?
Yes, we definitely have.
Oh, all right. Never mind.
Representative Gunther has toured some of his great manufacturers in his community.
I'm going to give her some.
All right. You want me to do it?
I want to pretend.
So, in addition to being a consulting organization for small and mid-sized manufacturers, and we define that as 500 employees or less, we like to talk about the connection that we try to bring between the public and private enterprise, and this is just an example. I have three CEOs with me today to talk about the Growth Acceleration Program and how it helped them. Just this morning, I was at one of the community colleges talking about what they're doing for manufacturing and connecting media, economic development, grantors, elected officials, so that they truly understand the power of manufacturing. An example of this is some of these household names of McDonald's, Cargill, Caterpillar, and everyone knows the household names. But the bulk of manufacturing in our state are in those companies between 20 and 500 employees. The automated equipment of Red Wing or Central Container of Brooklyn Park or Douglas Machines of Alexandria, they are located all over the great state, and they're oftentimes buried into the supply chain of the names that we know. But these are the job creators that you're going to hear from today. Examples of manufacturers that are in many of the districts that are here right now, from St. Paul Brass to Miltronix in Chaska to Anderson Corp. They are located all over. We all like to talk about Marvin Windows up in Roseau, but they have a tremendous supply chain of smaller companies that are critical to them being the job creator that they are. Enterprise Minnesota is here today to seek a state investment grant of $3 million of ongoing general fund dollars to reauthorize GAP for the 2014 to 2015 biennium to help manufacturers leverage their own investment in their companies to grow their businesses and retain jobs and create jobs. GAP was first funded by the legislature in 2007 with a one-time funding of $750,000, and in 2009, despite a $4 billion budget shortfall, the legislature appropriated $1 million in new funding. To me, this is a testament to our work and the business results GAP has fostered for manufacturing. Since its inception, GAP has worked with over 245 manufacturing enterprises. The results are quite impressive. Through an independent survey, these companies have created or retained 1,700 jobs, boosted company sales by $106 million, saved $16 million in business costs, and on average generated a 30-to-1 return on a dollar investment. Companies eligible for GAP have to be located in Minnesota, are a manufacturer or a related industry, and operate as an independent profit center employing 250 full-time employees or less. In order to qualify, they must have a business plan for improvements and demonstrate an economic need for the money. The program is administered by Enterprise Minnesota, and Deed is the fiscal agent. As you weigh important state funding decisions this session, know that GAP funding is an important component in bolstering Enterprise Minnesota's ability to leverage federal dollars that come through the U.S. Department of Commerce Manufacturing and Extension Partnership, or better known as NIST MEP. This cooperative agreement, of which we are for the state of Minnesota, and every state has a cooperative agreement, works solely on benefiting smaller manufacturing companies and is critical to the creation and retention of jobs. The program is a great collaboration of public and private enterprise. If a company engages with Enterprise Minnesota or one of our independent consultants to do work to improve their business, and we'll take example of a certification to sell internationally in certain countries, if it costs $10,000, they could get a rebate of 25 or 50%. So they must pay 50 to 75% of the service. They devote a tremendous amount of time, but out of that, they're going to grow their business, retain, and create jobs. When we testified just after the beginning of the recovery of the recession, there were a number of executives that said that they clearly would not have made the investment without this small rebate from the state of Minnesota. Joining me today are three representatives of manufacturing companies in Minnesota. Tracy Tappany, who is a co-president of Wyoming Machine in Stacy, Minnesota. Don Vandermeer, president of Flow International in McGregor and Hoyt Lakes. Many of you who have lake homes probably have one of their wonderful docks. And Brandon Anderson, vice president of sales and part owner of Von Ruden Manufacturing, located in Buffalo. And they will share their respective company stories and the value that Gap has brought to their employees and business. Before I do that, I'd like to share a story of a Minneapolis-based manufacturer who planned to join us today, but through a really executive decision decided we didn't want to spread his flu to the rest of us, so we thought it best for him to stay away.
Good executive decision.
Didn't take us long either. Absolute Quality is the company I wanted to talk about. They're a manufacturer of cable assemblies and harnesses for very trying conditions. Daktronics, the large scoreboard, is their largest customer. And through Gap, they've stabilized their manufacturing process and expanded their operations. They're established in 1938. They sit literally in the shadow of the new Twin Stadium on the western edge of downtown. And quite frankly, until recently, were under pressure to not expand because of consideration for the new Viking Stadium. When we first met them, they employed 75 people and were frankly suffering dramatically from the 2008 recession. They were under pressure because of Daktronics being their largest to reduce costs, etc. And they knew they needed to stabilize their manufacturing process, but at the same time look for new customers without risking their old. We worked with them to create a short-term roadmap for lean training, process and order entry improvement, a quality system and quality certification. And our goal was to reduce inventory by 50% because this small company had $2 million of inventory, and our specialists felt that they should have $1 million at maximum. Reduce scrap, become a green manufacturing. With the help of Enterprise Minnesota and the GAP program, the company put together a process improvement plan and today have achieved $3 million in increased sales, $500,000 in a retained sales with their largest customer, have retained 20 jobs and created 10 new ones. They've invested $200,000 in new equipment and $150,000 in other business improvements. The reason we have strong following is because of the business results. Our federal program says that all these manufacturers you see beside me and anyone we provide services to will complete an independent survey, which is confidential information that really tracks sales increase, cost improvements, capital equipment expenditures, but most important, tracks retained and created jobs that they give our services credit for. And Gap oftentimes is a key part of having the smaller companies get on that journey of really improving their business to create and retain jobs. With that, unless there are any specific questions of myself, I think the most interesting part is to hear from some of the CEOs, but I would certainly stop at this point and see if there are any questions on the program before we hear the three individual journeys. Mr. Chairman?
I don't see any questions, but I'm sure over the... Oh, Representative Fabian. Hopefully it's not another tax question to start an argument here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, this could lead to an argument, I will admit that.
Arguments are good, just not over tax on this committee.
It's obvious I haven't done a real good job of explaining Northwest Minnesota to a lot of people, and no criticisms meant. On Tuesday, I was in committee, and I saw on a map that there was a high population density area from north of Rosa to the Canadian border over to the shores of Lake of the Woods. That's a tamarack and spruce swamp. There's not very many people that live there, so I worked on that one. Tuesday, I heard in committee that DigiKey was located in Fergus Falls, and we got through that and said that it's definitely in Thief River Falls. Today, I love Marvin Windows. I have them in my home, and I've heard that it's moved from Warroad to Roseau, so I'm not sure. No, I'm kidding. I'm just pointing that out.
All I know is that the Marvin Windows that are in my home came from up north.
Yeah.
And
White Lakes is in central Minnesota, just so you know.
Is it outside the 690? No. I don't think that you're going to get any questions here. Why don't you proceed? Identify yourself for the tape and please proceed. And maybe we'll come up with other ones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I have to say I'm a little bit nervous. I was here in 2009 for the first time to address the committee at the time about we were just entering into GAP. And then shortly thereafter, the economy went where it went. So I'm hoping I'm not the one that turns it back to where we were. My name is Brandon Anderson. I'm with Von Rudin Manufacturing. I'm currently the president of a family-owned business. We've been around for over 67 years. Our family owned since 1989. We've grown and evolved over those years, but one thing we're very proud of is that through all that time, we've remained a Minnesota company. The previous presentation had mentioned about state competition for employment and companies, and I can confirm with that on a weekly basis, I'm notified by South Dakota, Georgia, South Carolina, Nebraska, Iowa, Wisconsin, and North Dakota in that order, all trying to lure in businesses for their states. What we manufacture at Von Rudin Manufacturer are hydraulic motors and gearboxes, and to most people in the world, it doesn't really mean much. But what those attachments are used on are commercial mowers for Toro, Exmark, Briggs & Stratton. We also do hydraulic motors that are on Terex, Link Belt, and Power Curver paving equipment. We've invested in the last 10 years, and most importantly the last 3 years, into a new market called the machine tool market, where we make precision gearboxes that are used on CNC equipment for Mazak, Morisik, and Kuma. And the list of clients that Bob had put up, I noticed that over half of them are current customers of ours on this new product line, so we're proud to see that they're growing and advancing. Our annual sales are $9 million a year. We employ roughly 54 people, engineers, salespeople, machinists, and various other clerical positions. 90% of our employees have been with me for my 20 years with the company, if not longer. They still call me the kid, and 90% of them also live within a half hour of our facility. The average wage we pay is $57,000 across the company with full benefits. So it's not a low-end paying job, but a career and a lifelong job they can maintain. We contribute locally and to the state, providing an investment back in through our employees and our community. We're proud to be in Wright County. We think it's one of the areas of the state that is progressively moving forward. We were the first private business in the industrial park in Buffalo in 1989. We also contribute to the local libraries, school systems, police force, firefighters, with defibrillators, computers, technology, and so forth. If I may toot our horn, which we don't do very much in the small business world, but last month we received the 2012 High Economic Vitality Business of the Year Award from the Wright County Economic Development Partnership. Of course, I have to admit that vitality is not a word we use every day, so I did have to look that up to make sure it was a positive reward. What I found, though, in the meaning of it, it meant exuberant strength and a capacity for survival and continuation of meaningful existence. To us, it was a pretty powerful word to use for just a small business doing what we do and doing what's right. We operate under three commandments across all that we do in the company. One is always do what's right. Reinvest for the future, which we must, and never quit as we work towards another day and another opportunity. So whether it's finance, product development, market growth, that's the three philosophies we use. Our newest market of machine tool attachments has opened the door to a $60+ million market in the U.S. sales alone for us. We have staged ourselves with completion of product development, we have inventory in stock, and we continue to work through relations to gather in those sales revenues. The only thing that is holding us back in terms of where we're going in the future is the margins and profit size of things. Since I started 20 years ago, our profit margins in these markets have been reduced by over 50%. Although there is sales revenue, the dollars at the end of the day are very difficult to come by to reinvest and be competitive with the global economy. We came across the Growth Acceleration Program, otherwise known as GAP, as a resource to provide a spark for us when the economy was starting to show a slowdown. The influx of money can solve a short-term dilemma, but the key with the GAP program is that the investment is tied to responsibility. Which then in terms can provide a long-term solution. The Growth Acceleration Program also provides funding to keep the projects themselves that need to keep employment levels stable and opportunity to increase employment. So in 2009, when the economy was beginning its downward trend, we were able to maintain employment level numbers that we would not have had without the programs in place that we were participating with GAP. The main one for us, our first one, was the ISO 9001 2008 rating. As a leader of a manufacturing company in Minnesota, I'm here today to tell you and to express our strong support for this GAP program. There's many companies like ours that are throughout the state that have opportunity to grow and opportunity to provide returns. I remember talking with Enterprise Minnesota about ensuring the investment that they made with us, along with the federal and state funds, that it would be secure and achievable so that the return on investment could be documented, could be shown, could be brought forward. I can come before you today and say at that time we were expecting a $30 to $40 to one return on investment. In 2012 we received a $60 to one investment for that current fiscal year. In 2013 we're seeing an 85 to one return on investment. Early in the year, but we're closing out our first month and we expect we could actually exceed that $85 to one. So the additional taxes for labor, insurances, property, sales, corporate income, and so forth, it's beyond my capacity to tell you and direct all the return that comes back to the state of Minnesota from that, but the one thing I'm pretty sure of is that it more than covers the initial investment that the state provided with GAP to Von Rudin Manufacturing. The one fact I do know that is manufacturing has proven to be one of only a handful of industries that actually creates economic activity from the dollar spent within itself. So a program of investment with sustainable accounting results that actually pays back dividends to the people that actually funded the program. The partnership between the economy and the manufacturing companies like ourselves being implemented through Enterprise Minnesota and the GAP program, we believe proves and continues to prove by paying back to the citizens of Minnesota. I'm not here to tell that or even emphasize that Von Rudin or my employees are any more important than another company in northern Minnesota or southeastern Minnesota. What I'm here to say is the funding for this program is being implemented and it is being proven to show returns on that dollar invested. I'm also here to tell the committee that we represent just one of many success stories that are out there on an annual basis. On the behalf of myself and our employees in Buffalo at Von Rudin, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any quick questions? I'm going to try and get everybody in. All right. Well, I will say this. Does it strengthen your ties to Minnesota with this kind of a program?
Excuse me, sir?
Does it strengthen your ties to Minnesota with this kind
Absolutely,
of program?
Absolutely, 100%, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. That was the answer I wanted to hear.
Mr. And now I'd like to introduce Don Vandermeer from Flow International, best known for their great aluminum dock products.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to share my perspective on this subject today. I, too, was part of the group that was in about 3 years ago, helping to solidify these funds. Since that time, I've probably only become a bigger believer in the funding and the training that we've gotten from the GAP program through Enterprise Minnesota. As Bob mentioned, I'm president of Flow International. We manufacture snowmobile trailers, ATV trailers, dock and boat lift systems. Boat show starts in about a half an hour. It's a great time to get a good deal on a dock or boat lift. So hopefully I'll see you over there.
I will tell you, I was down in a down in Missouri this last summer, where someone had a 12,000 square foot dock
with a roof on it. I bet.
Oh yeah. There's no dock down there without a roof on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, at 12,000.
That is interesting. We're looking at that market. We've recently just introduced a new boat called Flowcraft. You've maybe seen in the, there was a story in the Pioneer Press just 2 days ago on that product. So that's a big growth opportunity for our company. And as a first boat, it's quite the craft. It's a 36-foot boat that's 10 feet wide. That's a convertible, more or less, where you can push buttons and you can go from more or less an open-air pontoon boat feel. And in 29 seconds, you can have a fully enclosed cabin with heat and or air conditioning. So, again, a true opportunity for growth. We're currently in the midst of building our largest manufacturing building, 100 by 400 foot expansion across the road for our main facility. Our main facility is located in central Aiken County, north of little town of McGregor, Minnesota, right near Big Sandy Lake. And then we have an auxiliary manufacturing facility up in Hoyt Lakes, Minnesota. I do know where that is.
So do I.
I don't know much about taxes, but I'm pretty geographically well-versed in where all these small towns are in Minnesota. We employ about 18 to 20 people up in Hoyt Lakes. At any given time, we're a little bit seasonal, so that it does fluctuate throughout the year. You know, my experience with GAP is that, you know, obviously every business needs to be training and moving forward with their people. And the GAP program has really made it an easy way to make it a priority as a business leader to make sure that we're getting the proper training throughout the depths of the organization. Enterprise Minnesota is a perfect partner with the GAP in that they really do provide laser-focused, actionable training that, you know, we literally, when we do training, it, the implementation is starting near happening while the training's going on. And we've done many different training sessions. One of them that I think a lot about and that's probably had the biggest impact was a lean certification training that we did, and we had about 20 Flow employees that went through this training. And, you know, what that did, it really transformed our organization in a big way, and that particular training was before the economic downturn. And there's a pretty good chance that I wouldn't be here talking about Flow if we hadn't been engaged in, you know, what that training led us to. And I'm just going to share with you just a few overall, you know, big key wins, metrics, if you will. One of them, you know, back in the mid-2000s, our revenue per employee was about $95,000. And at that time, that was about average for a manufacturer. And as I've learned in this business, average will get you killed quickly. So we knew we had to improve that. And today, at the end of 2012, our revenue per employee is about $224,000. So it's almost 2.5 times. And it's not really through growth. With the downturn, our business revenue went backwards almost in half, in that we sell expensive things that you don't need. And now we've grown that revenue back to actually just set a record here last year. And so our sales are about the same. And, you know, we've really been able to get a lot more throughput with what we've learned. How does that happen? One of the biggest things that we've learned is standardize everything. And the standardization that we've learned through Enterprise Minnesota, we used to be very much a kind of a tribal knowledge.